Hi, I'm John Ostrower, editor-in-chief of The Air Current.
Hi, I'm Brian Summers, and I write The Airline Observer.
And I'm Brett Snyder, author of Cranky Flyer. You're listening to The Air Show, the podcast where we talk about what goes on in the business of the sky.
Gentlemen, what are we talking about today?
Today, we're going to talk about Pratt & Whitney and its geared turbofan engine. Been in service since 2016 and had a myriad of issues with its durability and reliability, which have caused really acute headaches for the world's airlines. They bought it for the fuel efficiency, and it was going to be Pratt's big comeback in the engine world. There's been an inordinate amount of ink spilled in recent years on Boeing. It's the iconic face of U.S. aerospace and synonymous with commercial aviation. Yes, its troubles have earned enormous scrutiny in the ire of customers, Congress, and the FAA, but add that up with Pratt's troubles on the Airbus single-aisle aircraft. It's been a 1-2 punch to the airlines. Pratt's challenges are, I think, really worth a closer look because they're not just near term.
John, I am really excited for this. But first, I need to bring the audience in on a little disagreement Brett and I had yesterday. Brett says that we have a trade audience, and all of our listeners surely know exactly what a GTF engine does. But I cover the commercial side of the business, and I'm pretty sure that most of my sources have no idea what makes a GTF engine special. Their job is just to sell the seats on the airplane.
Now, hold on here. This is not what I said. This is what I was saying is I don't think it matters because that's not really where the issue is anyway. But, you know, we can talk.
Okay, let me give you the dime store tour of Pratt & Whitney's strategy here. So generally speaking, the gigantic front fan of an engine spins at the same speed as the core of the engine. That's the way it's historically been. The gear, which Pratt put billions into developing, allows that gigantic front fan to move a larger mass of air slower. In fact, 3 times slower. While the core wants to spin fast and is able to do so more efficiently at hotter temperatures. From an architectural standpoint, it produced a huge jump in efficiency, anywhere from 15 to 20%, just by letting each part of the engine spin optimally. That part is working great. Pratt spent so much time on that part of the engine, it's actually been really reliable. The problem is the rest of the engine.
Yeah, the geared turbofan, you know, I know it's something that's been tried for years. It was always thought maybe it'd be too complex, whatever. Pratt crushed it with that. It works. It's fine. That's not the problem. It's everywhere else that's causing problems, right?
Yeah, they've had issues with bearings, they've had issues with the combustor, and now the latest issue that they've had actually has little to do with the design of the engine than it does the manufacturing of the engine. So way back in March of 2020, when everyone in the world was freaking out about COVID, literally, actually, almost to the day, a Vietnam Airlines A321 CO, so the older generation engine, with a V2500, which is the predecessor to the geared turbofan, had an engine failure. What ended up happening was that this investigation's unfolding, and they found that in the manufacturing process of the engine, Pratt was inadvertently contaminating the powder metal used to make the high-pressure turbine and high-pressure compressor parts of the engine. For those not familiar with the intricacies of jet engines, that's okay. One thing you need to know is these parts sit downstream of the combustor where fuel and air are mixed and are exploded. That shoots out the back of the core and drives these parts to spin the front fan to create the majority of the thrust. These parts take an enormous amount of abuse, and if they're contaminated, they can crack.
Okay, so hold on one second here. I don't know what powder metal is. I'm not sure that I actually care. But the point is that there's some contamination in here that is causing these parts to not hold up as long because they have contamination, whatever it may be, and it's kind of the wear and tear of you know, the thrust coming over these parts and through these parts, and it's just not lasting as long as it's supposed to. Yeah,
yeah. Lasting as long is important, but also holding together. So an engine core cannot have an uncontained failure, which means that, you know, there's so much energy in the core of an engine that it can't expel parts through the main casing, which can hit the airplane, which can hit other things on the ground. I mean, you cannot have that happen. And so it's a safety issue over the long term. They have to make sure that these cracks don't happen. And so what does Pratt have to do? They have to go out to all the airlines and swap out all of these parts. This is an incredibly painful logistical process that Pratt is undergoing right now. First and foremost, the airplane needs to be taken out of service to have the engine updated. And so each time this happens, Pratt has to find a spot in somewhere in the engine MRO world to actually do the work. And for every single engine, it's taking about 250 to 300 days per engine. So the better part of almost, you know, 3/4 of a year to actually get this fixed. Just for context here, when the 737 MAX was grounded in 2019 and 2020, there were just shy of 400 airplanes that were sidelined. Pratt right now is forecasting somewhere south of 650 airplanes will happen at its peak. Actually, they said this week that they think it's going to be a bit lower. My understanding is probably between 500 and 550 at the peak. What all this means is that the number of lost flying hours from this issue are going to be greater than what was lost during the 737 MAX grounding. That's how big of a deal this is.
John, let me take you back here for a second, because there's a question that I've had for a long time. I'm sure that you can answer it. There are a lot of aircraft now that only have a single engine supplier. The A320neo family is not among them. I'm seeing all these airlines, they continue to buy this engine over the LEAP-1A from CFM. And as somebody who doesn't understand the technical aspects as much, it sounds like you're telling me that this Pratt engine, when it works, is so much better than anything on the market that airlines just want it anyways.
Well, look, I think it speaks to also the business models that were created when this engine first came out. And so Pratt wanted to come roaring back with market share. They, you know, CFM, joint venture between GE Aerospace and Safran in France, is the behemoth. They are the 800-pound gorilla in the market right now. And they had Pratt effectively almost pull away from the market, certainly on the wide-body side. And so the geared turbofan was going to be their chance to come back. And so in large measure, they went out and said, hey, we've got this novel technology that will significantly cut fuel burn. By the way, depending on who you ask, and how you measure, it's a couple percent between the LEAP engine from CFM and the geared turbofan.
A couple percent of what? Of efficiency gain?
Yeah, fuel efficiency improvement. Yeah. And so, but fuel efficiency isn't the only metric that matters. There is the life cycle cost of the engine. So there's the maintenance agreements, there's the durability, there's a lot of these things. So early on, there were all these quote-unquote power-by-the-hour agreements. Power-by-the-hour effectively says that the airlines negotiate an hourly rate to have maintenance on the engine. However much they fly, that's how much they pay. They can predict it and all that. That's all well and good when you're trying to build market share, because what ends up happening is about 70-ish percent of the revenues that come into a company like GE or Pratt from an engine business is maintenance. It's not the actual sale of the engine. And so the engines are more or less given away for at or sometimes below cost just to get them into the field, because you'll make it back over time.
It's the razor blade model here.
Precisely. It's the razor blade model. And that hasn't changed in aerospace, but how you pay for that has, as these engines have actually gotten out there. So back to your core question, which is how did this get built? Well, there was an arms race between GE and Safran on CFM and Pratt to try and get as many engines as they possibly could out in the market with as many airlines as they possibly could. And this is a long-term race. And so we've got Pratt engines on today, the Embraer E2 family, the A220 family, and the A320neo family, and they share on the A320neo with CFM. So one of the things that makes this so much harder is that if you compare the rate of sort of availability of the engine, the production rates today in 2024 and over the last, you know, several years have been so much higher than when the V2500, its predecessor, came out on the 320, that effectively you just have so many more engines to handle when you have a less mature product with the same levels of reliability. There's always been reliability issues on new engines, but the magnitude is so much more pronounced given the number of airplanes that are out there.
Let me just go back for a second, John, to some of the things you were saying in the beginning. You said that this is a safety issue. It's not just a durability issue on the GTF. But I thought they were saying, no, no, it's not. It, safety is fine. That's not an issue. This really is just about durability, reliability, and that's what the problem is. And there's not actually a safety issue here. So is that not true?
There is definitely a durability issue. Reliability is whether or not the engine keeps working. Durability is whether or not the engine can be operated in service with the wear and tear that it's accumulating. Safety is it safe right now to even turn on? And a safety issue sparked this. Let's just be clear about that. The engine failure on the Vietnam Airlines aircraft back in 2020 was the thing that ultimately triggered this entire investigation and the entire process of having to pull engines from service to fix this. So if left unchecked, yes, it will be a safety issue. But that's why they're doing it. So they have an expectation in terms of their analyses. They know how many cycles and hours can be accumulated on these aircraft engines to a point where it does become a problem, and they're just trying to make sure they're well ahead of that.
Okay, so what they're saying is that it's not a safety issue because we know it won't be an issue until X amount of hours or cycles or whatever it is that it's measured on. So you can keep operating until that point just fine, but it would become a safety issue.
Yeah, the Vietnam Airlines situation illustrated that writ large.
Okay, which, and of course, that was a V2500, maybe different story, but it's the same issue of the powder metal being contaminated for that. That was the same thing.
Yeah, it is. Yep.
All right.
Yep.
Okay, and so that's why we get stuck here. And then the 250 to 300 days that it takes to replace each one is the real problem here, right?
Yeah, that 250 to 300 days is the time it takes for the engine to come off of the wing, find a spot in the very crowded MRO system, get inspected and updated. That takes about 60 days, and then back on the airplane. All in, 250 to 300 days. It's a lot. And what Pratt has tried to do is they're trying to like flatten out the amount of airplanes that will be out of service at any given time to minimize the disruption based on the margin that they know that they have here. So what they're doing is they're also bundling other improvements like a combustor update and some other durability improvements across the engine with this as well. So they're trying to, you know, have engines come in at what their, you know, normally scheduled time for maintenance would be. But we're still way off of the normal pace here, given the number of airplanes that are having to come out of service.
Holy cow, that is crazy. So here's where I've been the most confused on this whole thing, though, is I feel like the numbers keep changing. The goals are shifting. Everything's going on. And I know we're going to talk about this a little bit later with the impact on airlines, but why can't they nail this down? Why can't they figure this out? Things keep leaking out and I don't understand. Well,
Pratt has tried to, I think, lean into this as much as they possibly can. I mean, the thing is, Pratt is part of RTX, formerly Raytheon Technologies, formerly United Technologies, as the industry has consolidated. So the impact on the overall RTX Raytheon behemoth that it is smaller than it would be if it was a more standalone or isolated part of the UTX business. And so I think it's financially, it's something that they're able to wrap their arms around. But it's, again, a huge, huge, huge challenge. And I don't think that the goalposts have been moving. I think there was an initial expectation, and the numbers have been changing. But I think that actually the one thing that has been getting better from Pratt's perspective is the number of peak engines that they believe. They said 650. My understanding from my reporting, it's roughly around 500 to 550. That will probably hit sometime this summer. That's the peak number of engines. But there's going to be, you know, several hundred of these airplanes sidelined over the next several years. And so this is a multi-year process. And, you know, one of the things that has complicated it even more is that when Pratt found out that the parts were contaminated, it took a while for those to actually stop going into engines. So the batch of engines ends around 2021 based on their build time for these parts. But the problem is that those parts were already in the system. And so they're actually, the engines with these parts actually roll to almost through 2023 as well, which makes another headache on top of everything else. This is going to stretch for a while.
All right. It's a mess. I think we've got that. So we need to get into the impact on airlines. There's been a lot of news on this lately. So first, let's take a break, and then we'll come back and get into that. Hey, Brian, do you know what airlines hate more than anything?
Oh, I know this one, Brett. It must be hidden city ticketing. Or maybe not getting airplanes delivered on time. Or perhaps it's snarky industry podcasters.
Okay, they do hate all those things, except for us. They love us, of course. But no, the thing they hate most is an empty seat.
Ah, yes, perishable goods. Because once that plane pushes back from the gate, the empty seat, it'll never be sold again.
Exactly, and this is why our sponsor PlusGrade has come up with Seat Blocker, which allows airlines to sell extra seats to passengers that would otherwise go unsold.
I've seen this before on many airlines, and it's a great product. As a traveler, I don't have to buy a second seat at the full fare just to get more room. I can pay less, a lot less sometimes, and get an empty seat or even a whole row to myself. Pretty neat.
Yeah, it's great for travelers, but also for airlines because it's a way to monetize that seat that's otherwise going to go empty.
But I haven't seen this in the United States, right, Brett?
Yeah, that's right. There are nearly 20 airlines using this today, ranging from Aeromexico to Etihad, Qantas, and Tap Air Portugal, but somehow no U.S. carrier has used this yet.
Sounds like it's time, Brett. U.S. Airlines, don't you want to take my money?
PlusGrade are the experts in monetizing unsold inventory. Reach out to them to implement this for your airline so you stop leaving money in empty seats.
We talked about this last week, but this is really a fascinating promotion. Uplift, the leading buy now, pay later solution for the world's travel brands, is partnering with Southwest Airlines by providing eligible customers with 0% financing on Wanna Getaway Plus, Anytime, and Business Select qualifying fares. Customers can take advantage of this limited time offer by selecting Uplift at checkout, filling out an easy application, and if approved, will receive a 0% APR offer. It's the last chance to take advantage of this special offer because it expires April 30th.
It's a great option for customers since Uplift has easy auto pay, multiple monthly payment plans to choose from, and no late fees or prepayment penalties.
But it's particularly interesting for airlines. Southwest is not offering this on Wanna Getaway fares, only higher fares. So the very attractive 0% financing means customers can use monthly payments for those higher fares with more benefits and have less out-of-pocket up front than buying the cheapest Wanna Getaway option.
It's another win-win. To learn more about Uplift's lending partners, see uplift.com/lenders. Terms and conditions apply. Visit southwest.com/uplift for more. Welcome back, everybody. This is a topic that has come up just this week on a couple of earnings calls, JetBlue and Volaris. JetBlue said this week that it expects to have about an average of 11 aircraft out of service through most of the year, but at times in the second quarter, it'll be up into the mid-teens. Also, they couldn't tell us much about when this was going to end or how long it was going to take. The CFO said there was quite a bit of uncertainty going 2025 to 2026. I will say the JetBlue call followed the model I've heard a lot, where airlines just put up their hands. They are very polite. They say Pratt is doing the best they can. They say they're getting paid by Pratt and the engines will be fixed when the engines will be fixed. There was something different that went on in the Volaris earnings call, the big Mexican ultra-low-cost carrier. They were a bit more angry. It was a tone shift for them and overall, I think, in the industry. I'm sure their airlines tell you different things, John, than they tell us on these public earnings calls, but mostly airlines are pretty polite on the calls. Volaris had 60 engines on the ground in the first quarter, and they were forced to reduce their capacity by 13%. Also, the CEO had some fiery things to say just about the difference between what Pratt has been promising airlines and what they've been delivering. So he talked about how Pratt had this, quote, optimistic discourse, end quote, on how it could enhance MRO capacity and would have more materials and spare parts. And this was part of the scripted part of the earnings call, so you know they mean it. It said, Volaris remains skeptical about tangible progress in these areas. We're just about halfway through earnings season now, and I wonder if we're going to hear more of this fiery talk from other airlines. John, do you have any idea, like behind closed doors, right, when they're not talking to the media, when they're not talking to investors, when they don't have to pretend everything is great, on a scale of kind of mad to like Boeing level angry, where are airlines right now?
Yeah, it's up there with the Boeing level angry. I mean, they are incandescently upset about this. I mean, they are really, really, really peeved because the goalposts in terms of the pace of this is shifting. I mean, they're trying to plan an airlines here, and they just kind of can't. They don't know how many airplanes they're going to have. Yes, Pratt has tried to, you know, reduce the scheduling and the peak number of out of service airplanes. You know, the peak out of service airplanes is everyone in aggregate. But if you're one of the individual airlines who's hit and you're trying to develop a schedule, it's like, well, who cares about the peak of everyone together? I mean, where's my engine? And so this has been a huge reputational hit for Pratt. Huge, huge, huge. JetBlue and Spirit have been talking about this a bunch also, haven't they?
And Hawaiian. Don't forget about Hawaiian.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
I mean, most of what I've heard, it's the 1100, I think, is the series, right? But is it, with JetBlue, do we know, is it mostly 321 Neos or is it 220s as well that are impacted by this?
It's primarily on the 1100 G model, which is on the 320.
The Neo. But this is where I get so confused with this because it seems like it just has, it creeps in different directions that you don't quite know where it's going to end up, which to me is so frustrating. If I were an airline, I'd be losing my mind. And even worse, it's like, okay, I can't get my Boeing airplanes delivered. I get some Airbuses and the engines don't work as they're supposed to, and then I got to sit them on the ground forever. Like, what am I supposed to do here? I know if you're United, you go and lease some Neos that have LEAP engines, but you know, not many airlines probably have that option, right? They're not as important as United, maybe in the scheme of things.
Well, here's the thing. This is driving up the cost of airplanes, both for airlines that are trying to get their hands on 737 NGs, because if you A320 Neos and 737 Maxes going into the fleet meant that those airplanes come out and go into the secondary market. That's not happening. If you're United, you have obviously the largesse to go out into the market and say, hey, I need airplanes. I need a specific number of airplanes, as many as I can get my hands on, because number one, my Max 10s are, who knows when that's happening. Boeing has a slower rate on the Maxes generally in terms of their ability to deliver to them. But also, Pratt has empowering the 321 Neo fleet at United. United had a bunch of early issues with those airplanes, and has those have been a gigantic headache. They had an engine failure of a brand new geared turbofan. They had a bunch of engines come off for unscheduled removals. These are new engines. Let's just point that out. And JetBlue actually had a new engine that had an engine shutdown going that required a landing into Shannon fairly recently. And so there's also manufacturing questions that are being looked at by the FAA right now. I know the FAA is absolutely investigating what happened with the United engine. So when United goes out to the market and they say, okay, what can I get my hands on? Number one, okay, there aren't Pratt engines available because of all these other powder metal issues and the spares and the availability there. So they say, okay, we're going to have a split fleet of 321 Neos, and some are going to be CFM LEAPs and some are going to be Pratts. But this latest batch that they have negotiated, which they talked about on their earnings recently, are all going to be CFM engines. And I think that's as much a necessity for just the scarcity of engines as it is a hedge against what is happening with the GTF generally.
What a mess.
Now, there is a silver lining here, guys. As somebody who covers the commercial aspect of the business, we've seen a lot of airlines report higher year-over-year unit revenue. And some of them have made it clear that, you know, the fact that there is less capacity in the marketplace than there should be is good for business. We've seen this in the U.S. It was also something that was mentioned this week on the Volaris call in Mexico, because the CEO said, we have these Pratt airplanes out of service, and Aeromexico had 737-9s out of service. And lo and behold, the first quarter was kind of okay because the Mexican people didn't have as many choices for airfare. And we know what happens when airlines get unfettered access to new airplanes, right? They fly them as much as possible and fares go down?
Yeah, sure, except for JetBlue, which had fares go down anyway. Maybe not a great quarter for them.
No.
But, that was kind of a kitchen sink quarter, I would argue there. Let's clean up the sins of the past. But anyway, yes, you get more airplanes, sure. But this is the thing. There are some airlines that are doing well enough. You think about Delta and United, right? Where this is a strategic imperative for them. And, you look at United, we have our United Next plan. We need to do a lot of upgauging and we need to feed these hubs. We need to do all this work. They're making investments and they need the airplanes. They can't do it. And maybe it is a short-term hit to unit revenue, as they ramp these things up. Maybe not, depending on their plans. We don't know where they're going to put them. But generally, yeah, more seats, lower fares. And so for them, it's hugely frustrating. If you're someone like Hawaiian, you don't have that many airplanes as it is. these NEOs are serving routes that you can't put anything else on. The Long Beach Hawaii's or some of the thinner routes, the West Coast to the neighbor islands. So I think it's a lot more than just less capacity is okay. Maybe it is for Volaris, for JetBlue, it apparently seems to be because they keep wanting less capacity. But for some of these other airlines that have strategic needs, oh man, it's brutal.
It is brutal. And I think there's actually an even bigger picture that we have to kind of step back from this. And that's, what will this experience do to how airlines feel about an appetite for new technology? CFM and the Leap is full of new, advanced technology also, and they've had their own struggles to a far lesser extent. But these are expensive engines, and the cost of actually maintaining these engines is far higher than was initially promised. And so that's because you have hotter temperatures, you have more novel materials, and so that those hotter temperatures and novel materials equal greater fuel burn at a time when climate change is only going to push the necessity for using less fuel when you're flying from point A to point B.
So you're saying bringing back the JT90s is not the best plan right now?
Not the best plan. But at the same time, airlines want a reliable operation. They need a reliable operation because you end up burning up your fuel burn benefit in cancellations and other costs. And, ultimately you piss it away on maintenance. And so what the next generation of engines looks like and what business models you have with that in terms of who pays for maintenance and how it gets paid for in these new technologies is going to be the central question for the 2030s and the engine business. Because, look, these hotter temperatures are having an effect. The 737 MAX engine anti-ice issue fundamentally is part of higher temperatures coming off of the LEAP engine. Again, getting to the next step change in fuel efficiency is going to require new materials, hotter temperatures, and who pays for that? And whether or not airlines have an appetite for the risk that comes with that, given the headaches they have now, I think it's a gigantic open question.
But I think this is always how things go. I said the JT90 because I had that in my mind, right? Because that was on the 747, right? That was the 9, wasn't it? The JT90?
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. And remember what happened to the first scheduled 747 flight? Engine problems.
Got canceled.
Pratt & Whitney engine problems. Here we are again. So it kind of goes in circles. And, maybe if I'm Go First or whoever it is that's sort of a new carrier, I am absolutely not putting all my eggs in one basket of new technology. That seems like a bad idea. That's a management failure to take that chance. You probably could have seen that coming. But if I'm a bigger airline, I'm okay with that. But you have to keep pushing on that because if you don't push, then the technology will never get developed. And then what good is that? We need the technology to be developed.
Yeah. I mean, this you're right. This is the existential push-pull. I mean, what airlines want at any given moment is fundamentally lower costs. And whether that's lower fuel burn and the price of fuel, or it's lower maintenance, it's that equation is going to be changing. And I think that we're just going to be something that we're going to have to watch play out over time here.
John, it is a real treat to get your take on all this interesting stuff from Pratt. You've been listening to The Air Show. And once again, thanks for following the show and welcoming it into your podcast feeds. We could use your help to spread the word about the show. Please recommend the podcast to your colleagues and anyone else in the industry who might enjoy it. You never know what you'll learn about powdered metal.
If you have suggestions or questions for us, or if you're interested in sponsoring the podcast, go to our website, theairshowpodcast.com, to get in touch.
Thanks to PlusGrade and Uplift for sponsoring the show. The Air Show Podcast is produced and edited by Sarah Fay. Our theme music is by Joshua Mosier. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back soon.